All right, thank you for coming this afternoon. And I'm really happy to present to you a friend and colleague, Dr. Helen Barrett, who I've known for since the last century. That's what I call it, scares my students. We met through our professional organization, but also through a lot of work that she was doing on electronic portfolios through PT3 grant funding. So electronic portfolios is an expertise for her, as well as digital storytelling. And I think what you're going to see today is a convergence of those two strengths and personal and professional interests. Mm-hmm. And what I'm excited for her to share with you is a kind of a new vision of portfolios that take advantage of the new tools that are available to us. So that's just your teaser, and I'm going to let her go ahead and share the rest of her presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here. It's been fun to come to this part of the country. I live in the Seattle area, but most people think I still live in Alaska because I spent 26 years in Alaska. I retired from the University of Alaska Anchorage. And I've spent the last 5 years doing independent research and consulting, and I am not retired, I'm rewired. Okay? So that's a lesson for a lot of us in academia. If you watch my YouTube video, which was just put up recently, which was recorded in February in Mumbai at the American School of Bombay, they did a TEDx evening where they had people come in and present their ideas for, 18, 19 minutes. And so I did one on the, I'm gonna just show you a few things from that video, which was on a few ideas that I had, but you can go and watch the whole thing where I talk a lot about those of us who are reaching the new midlife. And the new midlife is somewhere between the empty nest and infirmity, where you've got, it's for people over 50, so until you no longer want to work anymore. But that was a theme in that. What I'm going to talk about with you today is this idea of balancing the two faces of e-portfolios. And I'm drawing on this because what I'm really excited about is this whole idea. I don't know if you're familiar with the Roman god. I don't know. Do you pronounce it Janus or Janus? Any classics people in here? Okay. The Roman god, which with that two-facing head, is really the god of gates and doors, beginnings and endings. Hence, represented by the double-faced head, each looking in opposite directions. He was worshipped at the beginning of the harvest time, planting, marriage, birth, and other types of beginnings, especially the beginnings of important events in a person's life. So Janus represents the transition between primitive life and civilization, between the countryside and the city, peace and war, and the growing up of young people. Now, I really like that metaphor, and am using that metaphor to talk about portfolios, because I think it's important to take that into consideration. I'm going to talk about three themes in this presentation. One is on purpose, because purpose drives everything with portfolios. One is on process, and the other is on product. So those are three general themes. Before I get started, I'd like to find out, just by a show of hands, how many of you are currently implementing some kind of an e-portfolio with your students? We have the education department. Mm-hmm. In most campuses, it is the education department that has begun with e-portfolios. And then it's spread out from there. Okay, how many of you are thinking about it? Few. How many of you want to use e-portfolios to support student learning? Okay, and how many of you want to use electronic portfolio data for accreditation or institutional assessment? Okay. The rest of you are just curious, right? What is an e-portfolio? All right, let me talk a little bit about this concept. Have you ever heard of the term personal learning environment? Personal learning environment, PLE. Or you might say that my PLE, I say that my personal learning environment supports my self-directed learning through a personal learning network. All right. And my personal learning network today is where I communicate and maintain my own professional growth. I do that on Twitter. I follow a group of about 300 educators who are all have similar interests that I do. And then I record a lot of my learnings in my blog. And I also have an electronic portfolio, which you could go and see because it's linked from my website. So one of the things that we need to think about is how does this fit into a student's experience in their school? If we are asking students to become lifelong learners, how does this all fit? One of the things that I'm going to do, as I said, purpose drives the whole process of developing an electronic portfolio. So what I'm going to do is balance what I call the student-centered purposes for creating e-portfolios, which is really learning, reflection, and showcase, with institution-centered purposes that really focus on evaluation and accountability. Because I'm finding in the field of electronic portfolios, this is the tension. This is the tension between what's good for students and what does the institution need, and how do we balance those two? So that's going to be a focus of mine. I came across this diagram a few years ago as I was looking on Google for Google Images for something to represent lifelong learning, and this came up. These are the four pillars of lifelong learning published by a faculty member in Australia. And I looked at that and I said, you know, that really represents how you can use a portfolio to support lifelong learning. Let's take a look at each pillar. It's really a cyclical process with four key pillars, which an e-portfolio can support all of them. The first one is really self-awareness, knowing the learner. It focuses on the understanding of the learner's prior knowledge, their motivation for and attitudes toward learning. So a portfolio can serve as a mirror. So students can look in their portfolio and see a mirror of their helping the learner understand themselves and see their growth over time. That's a real powerful part of the portfolio, is that metaphor of a portfolio as mirror. The other concept is planning for learning or self-management. And with that, it refers to the setting of goals and the development of a plan to achieve those goals. So a portfolio can serve as a map for future learning. And so we've got mirror, we've got map. Two metaphors. Dr. Mary Dietz came up with those metaphors at least 15 years ago at Alverno College. The third concept is understanding how to learn, or meta-learning. It describes the awareness that a learner has developed with respect to different approaches to learning, either deep or surface learning, rote versus meaningful learning, and different learning styles. So a portfolio can contain different artifacts that can help learners recognize their successful learning strategies and become more aware of how to accommodate those learning approaches that are not as successful. So it helps the students become much more aware of how they learn. And then finally, evaluating learning, or self-monitoring. Refers to a systematic analysis of all aspects of the learner's performance. So it's synonymous with the responsibility to construct meaning and is very much associated with the ability to be reflective and think critically about a student's learning. So a portfolio must include, I believe, and this is my proposal, this is what's sort of new about portfolios, is that I think a very important part of a portfolio is a reflective journal, where the student can construct meaning, monitor their own learning, and evaluate their own learning outcomes. So that's just one way of viewing the portfolio from that context of a lifelong learner. What the bottom line is deep learning. Barbara Cambridge, who is one of the co-authors of this book, which I would highly recommend that you add to your library, which is a book of the research of the first three cohorts of the International Coalition of ePortfolio Research. It's sort of an informal collaborative of universities that are early adopters of ePortfolio systems. And they've done some very interesting research, and these are the reports or the stories of those first three cohorts. And it's published by Stylus, and it has some very interesting findings and data that you might be interested in. Barbara Cambridge says that deep learning involves reflection, that it is developmental, it is integrative, it is self-directive, and it is lifelong. So, sometimes I think, as I've been talking to people, that we've got some confusion of terminology when it comes to electronic portfolios. So I put together some of those characteristics, some of those terms, that an electronic portfolio is more student-centered, more lifelong and life-wide, whereas an assessment management system is more institution-centered and more for a limited time frame, the time that the student is in the institution. Assessment is more about individual learning and growth over time, focusing on personalization, reflection, deep learning. It can be formative or summative. I'll talk about that a little bit more. Evaluation is much more focused on comparability, sorting into groups, focusing on standardization and validity and reliability and some of those issues that we look at in terms of formal evaluation. But in many ways, one of the things that I'm finding is that our technology tools have defined the process and exacerbated the confusion. So a lot of people are adopting ePortfolio systems that, when I look at them, they really are assessment management systems. So one of the things that we need to find is an overlap, or find that sweet spot, that balance between the institution-centered approach and the student-centered approach. The institution-centered approach often is, the metaphor is often a checklist of outcomes or competencies or skills, and the student-centered approach is more, the metaphor I prefer is the student's story of their own learning over time. So how do we balance those two approaches is what I'm going to talk about today. What's a portfolio? Defined as, and if you think of portfolios in the traditional sense, who does portfolios? Yeah.
I know at my English class we use portfolios.
Yeah, right. Writers.
Yeah.
Writers do portfolios. Who else does portfolios?
Artists.
Who was the first portfolio keeper? Not electronic, but who kept the first most well-known portfolio? Do you know? Leonardo da Vinci. He was, you know, of the first of the people that you think of in history. He collected, reams of his work. Well, it's the dictionary defines it, of course, as a flat portable case for carrying loose papers and drawings. If you were to ask the average person on the street, how's your portfolio? What do they think about?
Money.
They think about the financial portfolio. They think about their stocks and bonds, and maybe not too nicely. They're not too happy about it these days. When so you think about a financial portfolio as that type of a document that documents the accumulation of fiscal capital or monetary assets. Let's change that definition a little and look at a portfolio in education that really documents the development of human capital or intellectual assets. So that's really what we're talking about. This is sort of an official definition that came out 2 decades ago, that it's a purposeful collection of students' work that exhibits the students' efforts, progress, and achievement in one or more areas, and I always add over time, because the real power of the portfolio is its ability to document the learning process over time, the growth that happens over time. So an electronic portfolio obviously uses digital documents. It's organized and presented with some type of authoring software, and it's organized in some type of an electronic container. My first electronic portfolio was written to a CD recordable disc. Some people in the graphic arts or in theater or in music or where you have high quality video that you want to develop might create a DVD with high quality video. But today, most portfolios are on the web. So, and the web, frankly, is changing the whole genre. Why do you think this container what's different about this container than these two containers? What's different? Access, yeah,
I was gonna say the same thing.
Yeah. Interactivity. You can't change something that's on a CD or a DVD. It's fixed. But when you put something online, it's not only is it accessible, but it's also, it's changeable, but it's also allows much more interactivity with a larger audience. So that's something to think about. But as you look at the traditional portfolios that you see here, the three-ring binder portfolios, if you think about that, most of the documents in that three-ring binder were born digital. Okay? They were born on a word processor. And then we published them electronically. So there's no reason why that can't stay in an electronic format. Today, we're moving this container, as it says here, to the web. Now, this diagram was developed in the UK for a study that was done for BECTA, which is the British Educational Computing and Technology Association, where they were looking at electronic portfolios across the education sectors in the UK. And one of the things they did was define sort of three components of an e-portfolio system. At the top here, you'll see these are multiple screens. And those multiple screens represent multiple portfolios for multiple purposes. And that's multiple showcase portfolios for multiple purposes. And they've listed here 5 different purposes: celebrating learning, personal planning. They do a lot of personal development planning in the UK. It's a requirement of all of their, at least their undergraduates. Transition or entry to courses, employment applications, accountability or assessment. Different purposes create different portfolios. They also identified in the middle here multiple tools to support these different processes. So it's not a single tool, but you're going to use multiple tools to put this together. And those different processes include capturing and storing evidence. It includes reflection, giving and receiving feedback, planning and setting goals, collaborating, presenting to an audience, and so on. And then at the bottom of this diagram is a single digital repository, a space, either local or remote, to store resources and an archive of evidence. So there's one digital archive of work, but multiple presentation portfolios depending upon purpose and audience. So that's one thing to sort of keep in mind. But some questions I'd like you to think about as we start going through and talking about portfolios. Number one, what happens to an electronic portfolio once the learner leaves the institution? In a lot of the commercial tools or systems that universities adopt, often when a learner leaves, the portfolio disappears. So it's something to take into account. And that leads us to the next question, can learners continue to maintain what I call their digital documentation of development throughout their lifetime, or after their experience with you, will they even want to? For some students especially in teacher education programs, electronic portfolio is a dirty word. Mm-hmm. It is. Because it's one of those hoops they have to jump through to graduate, and it's not a process they would have chosen to do. And I'm on a mission to change that. I'm on a mission to make e-portfolios a very intrinsically motivating environment, so that what we can do is build the process of reflective practice into a habit of mind that will support lifelong learning. But a lot of the ways e-portfolios are being implemented outside of Wake Forest, I must say. I haven't heard that from this campus. But outside of Wake Forest, I hear, especially from Neil and Keith and the research that they did, students don't see this as something that would be valuable to them outside. So that's one of my missions. But let's take a look at this cartoon. Is this happening here on campus? Somebody says, let's get an e-portfolio system, and we have three different faculty members who have three different ideas. What's happening? We can present students' artwork to the world online. It's one idea. Another faculty member says, a structured assessment system for specific courses. And a third member says, staff and students can reflect on their personal development. These are three different purposes for portfolios, and they come from different hidden assumptions about what a portfolio is. So what we're finding is there are multiple purposes for creating e-portfolios in education. We have learning or process portfolios that document the learning process. We have marketing or showcase portfolios that help a student showcase their best work to a potential employer or just to create their own online digital brand. And then we have portfolios used for assessment and accountability. It's very much like the famous poem of the six blind men touching the elephant. Remember that poem? They all touched something different and they said, oh, you know, it's a snake or it's a tree or it's a wall, because they didn't see the big picture. They defined it as something that they could touch. And that's very much like what e-portfolios are today. Based on your direct experience. So let's take a look at a couple of examples. Depending upon purpose, we'll determine what the portfolio looks like. A learning portfolio used more for formative assessment is organized chronologically, can focus on reflection between the learning activities and the artifacts that are The tools might be a reflective journal or a blog. And the role of peers and faculty in this process is feedback on the artifacts and the reflection that is in the portfolio. It's more documenting that learning process over time. The showcase portfolio, used for employment, self-marketing, is organized thematically. The best way to do that is take the job description you want to apply for and organize your portfolio around those job requirements. And then the student is able to reflect on their suitability for this particular position. And the tools should be of the choice of the portfolio owner. What best showcases that student's work? Could be personalized web page. It becomes their digital footprint, or as I talked about, their personal online brand, which a lot of students are starting to be concerned about, especially in a tight job market. Students who have a positive personal online brand might have a better chance of getting a good job. Then we have the assessment or accountability portfolios, often used for summative assessment. They're usually organized thematically around a set of outcomes, goals, or standards for a program. And I know that's what you're doing in the teacher education program. You're organizing their work around the teaching standards for the state of North Carolina. The focus of reflection is on their rationale for how well they think they have achieved those standards. Is that about what they're doing? The tools we use sometimes are assessment systems, and often we use those systems to gather data from scoring rubrics so that we know how many students have achieved that work. And the role of faculty in this process is more on providing that kind of evaluation. Now, these are very different kinds of portfolios. That doesn't mean that they can't be blended together, but it's difficult. It's sort of walking the fine line to be able to organize these. These are the different kind of presentation portfolios that a student would create. It's that top part of that diagram. But there's some limitations on portfolios. This comes out of an article that was published last fall. It's actually by the people who have created this, the CRA, the college, I don't know what that stands for, but anyways, it's a standardized assessment for outcomes in higher ed. And their point about the limitations of portfolios for high-stakes assessment have to do with lack of standardization, and it's not feasible for large-scale learning assessment, and certain bias built into the assessment. What I found even more interesting in this article were the responses to the article, and sort of looking at whether the vision is too narrow in traditional assessment, what's in it for the students, and so on. It really is. I think we're seeing our viewpoints on assessment changing. So my question really is, what kind of assessment? Is it assessment of learning, assessment for learning, assessment as learning? Assessment of learning is more summative, more institution-centered. Assessment for learning is more formative, more student and teacher-centered. And assessment as learning is embedded in the learning process itself, so that students get immediate feedback as they're learning, and it's a focus on what the student is learning in the present time. Assessment for learning is a very interesting concept that was developed in the late 90s through the Assessment Reform Group in the UK. Their definition is the process of seeking and interpreting evidence for use by learners and their teachers to decide where the learners are in their learning, where they need to go, and how best to get there. So it's a collaborative process, and it looks to the future. It helps the students decide how they need to improve. And what the researchers, Black and William, found out is that assessment for learning is the very best way to improve student achievement, because it gives them the kind of feedback they need to be able to improve. So what I've done is take these concepts and talk about, these are the two faces of e-portfolios. First, we have a working portfolio. The working portfolio is the collection of students' work. It's the digital archive, the repository of the artifacts. It includes a reflective journal and a space for collaboration. It's really the portfolio as process. It's what do we collect on a day-to-day basis about our learning. And it's what Washington State University calls the portfolio as workspace. That's my personal learning environment, where I collect the work that I'm doing. And in K-12 schools, we call it your digital shoebox. Okay? It's where do you collect your work? And the other side of the portfolio is more of the presentation portfolio. It's the story or the narrative. You can have different views for public and private views. You can have various audiences with different permissions to view the portfolio, various purposes, and what Washington State University calls the portfolio as showcase. So one of the things that I did was put together a diagram that sort of talked about these two formats and how they fit together. The portfolio as pr-
process or as workspace. The primary purpose is learning and reflection. It's organized chronologically. The reflection is in the present tense. It's immediate. It's what I'm learning now. Recorded in some kind of a reflective journal with feedback and links to the digital archive of the work. Then through a process of selection and over time, the student puts together a presentation portfolio that really showcases their work thematically. The organization is thematic based on whatever the purpose for the portfolio is. So you determine what is the purpose. If it's to show that they've met the teaching standards, then it's organized around those teaching standards. But it's organized thematically with the student's rationale. The reflection is sort of retrospective. It takes a look back over time, looks at that whole collection of work, and then so the student can actually look back and reflect forward and to see how much they have learned and how much they have grown. And then in addition to that, I think it also has a future direction, which is students setting goals for learning. And that those goals can be either set in at various points in the learning process, but I think every portfolio needs goals as a goal-setting process. So that's sort of a summary of the comparison of the organization, the comparison of the primary purpose, and the comparison of reflection. Reflection is different depending upon how you approach it. But I want to share with you a quote that came out of the UK where they're doing some very interesting work in developing portfolios. And this was a publication that you can download as a PDF, which is Effective Practice with ePortfolios, published a couple years ago. But this author says that the e-portfolio is the central and common point for the student experience. It is a reflection of the student as a person undergoing continuous personal development, not just a store of evidence. If it's just a collection of stuff, that's a scrapbook. But if it is really that reflection of the student and the student growth over time, then that's really what makes it a powerful tool. In fact, one of my favorite quotes is this: the portfolio tells a story. It's a story of knowing, knowing about things, knowing oneself, knowing an audience. Portfolios are students' own stories about what they know, why they believe they know it, and why others should be of the same opinion. One of my favorite metaphors is the portfolio is a laboratory where students construct meaning from their accumulated experience. Okay. So, you might ask me, and people often ask me, because my website, if you put in electronic portfolios, it comes up number one in Google. Don't ask me how I got that page ranking, but it does come up number one in Google. And I think it's because it's just been out there for 15 years. My website's been out there for a long time. So a lot of people link to it. So I often get this question: what's the best tool? How should I create these portfolios? And my answer is always, it depends. So the next question is, do we need an all-in-one system like this real Swiss Army knife? Or do we need multiple tools to address different parts of the process? And I'm really advocating that you look at your tools in a different way. Most e-portfolio systems in the past have been tools for presentation or tools for telling. And one of my colleagues in the UK said, I don't want tools for telling or presentation, but I want more tools for talking or conversation. That a portfolio really should be a conversation about learning between students and students, between students and faculty, because conversation can transform students' lives. So on my website, you can go to my website and you can look at all these different tools that are out there. I've sort of categorized them in tools that individuals and institutions can adopt, and then tools that are only for institutions. And the ones I want to focus on are just the second column, which is the Web 2.0 tools.
I believe that there's a difference between these different tools. Some of them differ in terms of their level of interactivity. Your desktop tools, which I've created portfolios using Word, Excel, PowerPoint, web design tools, they have little interactivity once they're posted. Whereas some of these other tools are much more highly interactive. And the other thing is the level of personalization and creativity. You get a lot of creativity with a Dreamweaver or a PowerPoint or some of those tools. So it's how do you find the balance between those two approaches? And that's where I've struck on Web 2.0 tools. Some of you may recognize this word cloud from early on when the term was coined in about 2004 or 2005, one of the two. And some of you may remember in 1998 when Time magazine put a mirror on its cover for the person of the year. Remember that? And they said, if you ever uploaded a video to YouTube, or you ever kept a blog, or worked with others on a wiki, you could be considered Time's person of the year. Because the real revolution that was happening with the web was user-generated content. And so those included blogs, wikis, social bookmarking, and so on. The whole Web 2.0 change. And part of it is because Web 2.0 is based on an underlying architecture of interaction or participation, which allows what I call a pedagogy of interaction. This is sort of what the web looked like when it first came out. A lot of published content, very little user-generated content, not very many global users. 10 years later, we had many more websites and a lot more user-generated content. A lot of it is terrible, and some of it is magnificent. And it just depends, and part of our task now is finding it and sharing it. That's why I'm on Twitter all the time, because my friends share with me the most wonderful websites and digital video and so on. So Web 2.0 is becoming the personal learning environment of the next generation. What do I mean by that? It is social and participatory, it's lifelong and life-wide, it's increasingly self-directed, it's motivating and engaging, and of course, it's online. So one of the things that I'm trying to do is figure out how we can integrate e-portfolios with what we know about social learning and interactivity. Because it's when you get students working collaboratively that you really see the power of social learning. So as we go forward, I want you to think about two basic concepts. An e-portfolio is both process and product. Process comes from the old French word, which means journey. And product is really the results of that journey, more like the destination. So I'd also like you to think about what are the engagement factors that drive the use of social networks, and how can we incorporate these factors into e-portfolios? Some of the new e-portfolio systems that are being built, including the open source portfolio out of New Zealand called Mahara. Mahara is a Maori word for thinking or thought. And they have built into their e-portfolio system a safe, contained social network and a blog, in addition to a presentation of their work, in addition to a digital archive of their work. If you were to look at, and I know this is a lot of text, but I thought I'd walk you through a little bit about the processes involved in portfolios and social networking. When you look at portfolios, you're really talking about the processes of collecting work, selecting from that collection, reflecting on that work,
What does it mean in terms of learning? Direction is setting goals for the future, presenting that work, and getting feedback. That's the basic process, compressed down, in a process that may take 2 years, compressed into this short list. When you look at the far column on technology, you see the value added of technology in that process. Archiving, creating a digital archive of the work, the process of selection is hyperlinking, which leads people to higher levels of thinking about work. Reflection offers us new forms of, technology offers us new forms of digital storytelling as a new form of reflection. Technology creates new forms of collaboration and publishing. Well, when you look at social networking, we've got some corresponding processes as well. Connecting with others or making friends online. Listening or reading. Posting, responding or commenting, and sharing, linking and tagging. This is the interactivity that we can add to portfolios. And I think it's important to think about this interactivity as we go forward. I'm going to just introduce one. I've got a couple books that I highly recommend. This is one came out just recently by Dan Pink. Called Drive, and it's really a look at the major differences between extrinsic and intrinsic motivation in the business environment. This is not that he has little bits in there on education, but he's really focusing on the business environment. But he says that there are three elements of true intrinsic motivation: autonomy, mastery, and purpose. In my video on YouTube, I talk about those in more detail, about how portfolios fit into that process. But one of the things that I'm seeing is the boundaries are blurring between e-portfolios and social networks. My question really is, what's the future of electronic portfolios? Is it in the structured accountability systems that we see happening a lot in higher education today? Or is it this lifelong interactive portfolio that's more of a mashup using a lot of these Web 2.0 tools like Facebook and blogs and wikis and Twitter and Ning and YouTube, Flickr, Picasa, and so on? Because that's where our students live. They live in that environment. How can we incorporate that into our e-portfolios? So I put together another diagram. I love inspiration. This is inspiration again. Where I organized, I really conceptualized a lifelong portfolio. Here we are, here you are down here. But keep in mind that there's a lot happening before students get to us. How many of you are on Facebook? Okay, how many of you have received baby announcements on Facebook? Pictures of new babies? Yeah. I mean, all my friends, my cousins, I actually find Facebook is my personal network, my family network. I have a few colleagues on there, but I don't try to encourage that on Facebook. I use that to keep track of my family. And my whole life changed when my 14-year-old granddaughter went on last summer. And so now I get to keep track of what she's doing. She friended me. Anyways. So we have families using these tools and collecting and putting their photo albums online. So we've got this space in the cloud where we're starting to store all of this work. Digital scrapbooking. And then we've got formal education where we're sort of changing the ownership from the family and the individual more to the institution, which I think we need to get back to the individual owns the portfolio rather than the institution. And then we move into professional development, and there's a real potential for professional portfolios. And then there's retirement. And how many of you, thinking of retirement, would like to tell your story for your kids and your grandkids and the descendants that you'll never meet, and preserve your family stories or as they've done some very interesting research on maintaining, doing what they call memory extension, helping people who are losing their memories remember their lives, sort of like the movie 50 First Dates, or you remember that movie. Anyways. But I think we need to think about, this is a really nice book. Anne has a chapter in this book, right? Wake Forest has a chapter in this book on the learning portfolio, where we really get students thinking about their motivation, that it's all about active learning, interaction with others, and a deep foundational knowledge. As John Zubizarreta says, because portfolios get students into a rich and deep knowledge base focused on their own learning experiences, portfolios are highly motivating. They can be highly motivated. Collaboration with others deepens these individual experiences to allow probing questions, socially constructed knowledge, and alternative viewpoints. So I think it's important to think about not only how can we leverage the social technologies and the social learning, but also the technologies that students own. I think we're going to see some real potential for using mobile technologies in the next few years for at least I know right now I can blog from my iPhone, and so there's a lot of potential for that. Connectivity with cell phones and incorporation with a lot of the desktop computers. Because one of the things that we want to take into account is what I call the everydayness of portfolios. How can we capture that, make e-portfolio development a natural process that's integrated into our day-to-day life? Now, I'm worried about how we will make e-portfolios stick. How can we make sure, or I ask you, will your students want to use the portfolio process after they graduate? Will the tools be available for them after they graduate? A lot of what's happening today is that students are using tools that they will never use after they graduate. So how can you set up a portfolio so that that's available? Now, how many of you are familiar with the Gartner hype cycle? Okay, here is the hype cycle from a couple of years ago. These are the elements of the hype cycle. It sort of is, they're essentially industries, companies, and people go through these five stages. The first stage, the technology trigger, it says, hey, this is cool. And that's sort of where I felt like e-portfolios were in 2001. Yeah. This was cool. The second stage, the peak of inflated expectations, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, we all think this is cool. The third stage is what is called the trough of disillusionment, where people say, whoa, we were sold down the river. The fourth stage is the slope of enlightenment, where we say, no, come to think of it, used in the right way, this can be good. And finally, the fifth stage, the plateau of productivity, is where this has finally become a part of what we do. Some people think e-portfolios are down here. And one of the reasons is, I think, is because we haven't discovered the right way of using them. And so I propose that if we can figure out the right way of using them, we'll have a better results. Now, I'm not going to go through this in a great deal of depth. Peter Ewell published an article just recently on the two paradigms of assessment, and the assessment for continuous improvement versus assessment for accountability. Two very different approaches to looking at assessment. And I propose to you that there is an opportunity cost, which is the alternative that we give up when we make a certain choice. And that alternative, that cost of that alternative must be foregone if we pursue a particular point of certain action. So this was the question I raised at the IUPUI assessment conference last fall. What is our opportunity cost?
in this in the area of electronic portfolios. Between the accountability or compliance or the more institution-centered or the model of improvement of student-centered or course-centered portfolios. One of the things that I find is in accountability, usually those systems are highly structured, they're uniform, certain required assignments, faculty has to evaluate, it's fairly complex. It's a checklist approach, but we get lots of data. But what do we trade off in that? Often we trade off student engagement, deep learning, personalization, choice and voice, lifelong skills, etc. So, but when we emphasize, on the other approach, when we emphasize all those things, flexible structure, self-assessment and feedback, lifelong skills, etc., engagement, we often give up in some institutions, that's where you get your funding to be able to do an e-portfolio. Often it comes out of the need for collection of data and accountability. So my proposal is to balance the approach. Back to that theme of balance. How do we balance these two approaches so that we can get the data we need, but still give the students their choice and their voice in this process? I propose, in terms of tools, that you use separate tools for assessment management and for e-portfolios, which I know is what you do here in the School of Education. And other universities have done this. Ball State, Washington State University, and so on, have developed separate assessment systems from their e-portfolio systems. And incorporate blogging and social networking tools for interactivity and engagement. Also, allow students to embed their Web 2.0 links, including video, into their e-portfolios. Video is highly motivating to incorporate into portfolios. And then enable exporting the e-portfolio to the student's lifetime personal web space. You know, someday we're all going to have our own little corner of the internet. And this should be a part of what students do. In terms of other strategies, acknowledge the importance of these two different types of portfolios, the process, the workspace portfolio, and the showcase or the product portfolio. Support their choice and voice in their portfolios, facilitate reflection, and so on. I really want to get and show you an example that I think really illustrates this. I believe we need to move beyond text-only artifacts, that we need to move to alternative strategies for reflection. I know you're doing a lot of video reflection. Blogging is another form of reflection, as well as digital storytelling. I call a reflection the heart and soul of a portfolio. And that digital stories can humanize any model of e-portfolios, because digital stories add voice to a portfolio. So I'd ask you, if you're developing e-portfolios, do they have voice, both literally and rhetorically? Because Maya Angelou said, when words are infused by the human voice, they come alive. So what I'd like to do is share with you a couple of digital stories that were done by college students in teacher education programs. So I'm going to share with you, first is one story that was done she'll explain it.
I first discovered it was missing in the spring of 2003, just a few days before graduating from the College of New Jersey. I had spent 4 long years away from home studying graphic design. I should have been ecstatic that I was graduating soon. But on the night of my portfolio review, I began to question the path I had chosen. As I stood in my new black suit showcasing my work, I couldn't help but feel awkward and uneasy. I felt like I was living the life of someone else. I had lost myself, my own sense of what was important to me, and what I would really be passionate about doing every day. My hands trembled across the table, draped in black, and my senses blurred together. Colors whizzed past me, and the noise of the crowded room closed in upon me and filled my head with insecurity and doubt. Could I really make a difference in the world and be satisfied as a graphic designer? My heart kept telling me that it wouldn't be enough, that something was missing. At the end of my exhausting day, I packed away my portfolio and realized that almost all of my art had been centered on children. It was at that moment I knew I needed to reconsider where I was headed. I applied to Kane University practically on a whim. The graduate program for art education would be my new destination. As I embarked on this journey, I hoped to make the focus of my portfolio the reality of my existence by becoming an art teacher. Would this path lead me to a happier ending? Putting my hesitation aside, I jumped in full force, ready to discover if the missing could be found there. From the first night of classes, I became alive again. It was so exciting to learn about how creativity can be nurtured in the lives of all children, not just the ones considered talented. I remember driving home on the Parkway late one night, thinking about how I had ended up at Kane and all that I had gone through to get here. My path had taken an unexpected turn. It was as simple as that. I had found my place, my purpose, and I couldn't wait to get into the classroom. I taught my own lessons in the field from the first month, and I have realized that although I'm the teacher, the children are not the only ones learning. Even the youngest children can use art to express themselves and to tell their stories. I've watched them explore different media and experiment with new techniques. I've listened to them describe their art in such detail and with so much imagination that the images jump off the page and become real. And during one particular Halloween parade, they taught me that being silly can be an integral part of being creative. But possibly the most important lesson I learned is that the process is far more significant than the result, that the journey should be valued above the destination. Outcomes are not always what we expect, but surprise twists can lead to exciting results. I will never forget how a group of fifth graders said my lesson was the best project they had ever done, or the look on little Mark's face with those bright blue eyes and chubby cheeks when he said that he would never forget me. Little do they know, they are all part of the missing. From here, my journey is unending. My story does not end here. But perhaps, that's really what it's all about. It may be that there really is no one destination or finished piece. Maybe the missing can be found right here in the journey.
That's reflection.
I won't play the second one because we're running out of time. But I believe that part of this whole process of digital storytelling brings together these four elements in terms of instruction, both student engagement, reflection, but also the effective integration of technology into the curriculum, as well as project-based learning. So it's a powerful tool. Just to give you an idea, if you want some ongoing dialogue about ePortfolios, we have I have a Google group. I have several Google groups that I support. One on researching Web 2.0 portfolios. I also have one for K-12 schools on using Google Apps for ePortfolios. There's a electronic portfolio action committee that has sponsors webinars and a listserv. And then there's a brand new nonprofit organization that's going to hold its first conference this summer in Boston, July 19th to 22nd, called the Association of Authentic, Experiential, and Evidence-Based Learning, ABLE. But it's a professional organization for ePortfolios in education. And then every fall, the IUPUI conference, assessment conference, has an ePortfolio track where they have a whole series of presentations that focus on assessment portfolios. So
My final wish to you is that all of your electronic portfolios become dynamic celebrations and stories of deep learning across the lifespan. I can take additional questions or questions from the audience if anybody wants to hang around, but I wanted to end within my time so that for those of you who have to leave, you could leave. But I am willing to answer questions. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.